Wrestling Radio, LockerRoomHQ.com.
Screw you guys. And that guy is too dumb. Think about the booking on that. That explains even less. This was the absolute worst thing I have ever seen any time in my entire life, and now I'm gonna go kill myself. Oh, what can you do? All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Wrestling Radio here on Locker Room HQ, part of the Pop Culture Network. And as always, I'm your host, Dirt. And today we're here to talk about Monday Night Raw, the Ashton Kutcher episode. But before we get into that, we have some other news and notes from around the world of professional wrestling that we need to discuss. And first off, if you remember on Friday, if you listened to Friday's episode, I talked about how The Undertaker in his match versus Rey Mysterio in the main event of the show somehow busted his nose open. He was bleeding from the mouth, had a nice little bloody Hitler mustache there. As it turns out, Undertaker, at the SmackDown tapings last week, suffered a concussion, broke his orbital bone, and broke his nose. So because of that, he is currently unable to wrestle. And it is unknown whether or not he will be able to wrestle at the pay-per-view. And so, funny thing was, Rey Mysterio had asked for a month off for vacation. And so they blew off his feud with CM Punk at the last pay-per-view. They had him lose this match to The Undertaker so that then Rey could leave for a month. And Undertaker called back early because so many other guys have been injured and out of action, whatever. Well, now that Undertaker is injured, he is off the schedule. Rey Mysterio's vacation has been canceled, and Rey is coming back to SmackDown. So, question is whether or not they're going to officially pull Undertaker out of the pay-per-view right now, if they're going to give him a couple weeks to try to heal and see if he will be ready. So, situation similar to what Randy Orton is happening. Boy, I am having a hard time structuring a sentence right now. I need to maybe have another drink of coffee here. Let me have another. I'm just going to listen to the music fade out here. All right, let me try to say this sentence again. It's a very similar situation to what's happening with Randy Orton over on the Raw brand. As he dislocated his shoulder, he will need to rehab it, and the doctors told him he needed to rehab it for a month. A month from the night he injured it, the pay-per-view is actually the next pay-per-view, Fatal 4-Way. So at this point, it's unknown whether or not he will be able to wrestle at the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view. So, right now, they're throwing around some other ideas. It's entirely possible that because it's a four-way match, they may just, you know, take it easy on him. He'll not do a whole lot in the match and be fine. But it's entirely likely that Triple H will be called back up from his time off and thrown into that pay-per-view. There's also a call that Jericho might be asked to do double duty that day, doing the four-way tag team match as well as the regular Fatal 4-Way. So we'll just have to kind of see how that goes. But these injuries, it's amazing because Raw last night went out of its way to push a lot of guys who normally don't get big pushes. Brought up people. And it's all about the fact that a lot of their top-level guys are injured. There are so many guys facing injuries, and with, you know, Shawn Michaels retired. Triple H was taking time off. Ray wanted to take time off. Undertaker wanted to take time off. It's just kind of getting to the point now where the schedule is not working and it's breaking down. And so they're having to elevate, you know, a lot of guys. And quite frankly, good. I mean, this is what the business needs. It needs new blood in there. But it's just kind of funny that they've backed themselves into this corner. Some other things to talk about, Jim Ross's new deal with WWE, he did decide to stick with them, but his new deal puts him in a scout role, I guess is the best term for it. He will work with the guys who are in training, finding new talent to bring into the developmental programs, and then recommending guys who are in developmental to move up to the big stage. There's also talk that he will be doing voiceover work for the 24/7 Classics on Demand and whatever their cable channel is that they end up launching in a year. So that's all stuff he enjoys doing, but no more TV, no more pay-per-view announcing, nothing like that. Although he may end up on NXT tonight for the finale because Daniel Bryan has called him out by name several times in the last couple months as he's picked on Michael Cole, deservedly so. It'll be interesting to see if anything happens with that. But for right now, Jim Ross's deal allows him to write a book. And if WWE wants to publish the book, they can. But he has the ability to take it to somebody else if WWE doesn't want to publish the book. Most likely, Jim Ross has some things he wants to say about the business, and he doesn't want WWE censoring him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Also, Jim Ross has the ability to do other projects that are not in direct competition with wrestling. So he will not be able to show up on a TNA broadcast. But if UFC wants to have him come in and call a couple matches, he can go to UFC and call a couple matches because it's not considered competition. Also, if the Oklahoma Sooners football team wants to have him on their radio show or have him, you know, guest announce a game or something like that, he can go do Sooner football because that's not direct competition with WWE. So, again, interesting how a lot of these things are taking shape within his contract, allowing him to do other things. But the biggest deal, though, is that he's always had a good eye for talent and scouting out new guys. And so his work with Florida Championship Wrestling, bringing guys in and elevating them up, will be a good deal in the long run. All right. Next week, of course, another 3-hour tri-branded episode of Raw. Another 3-hour tri-branded episode of Raw. You can just tell I'm oozing with anticipation. I guess the one thing here that they can do is push for SmackDown. SmackDown keeps losing ratings. People know it's going to be going off of their TV, so some people have given up on it already. Some people have already lost My Network TV in certain markets. They've just had their affiliates just pull out. And in a lot of the bigger cities where you would get a lot of the best ratings normally, SmackDown is the number one exempted. That's not the right word. Pushed out of its time slot TV show. Gosh, I can't think this morning. I'm going to have another drink of coffee here. Maybe that'll help clear the cobwebs out. But it's the number one TV show that gets pushed around due to you know, other sports, baseball games, football games, city basketball tournaments, that kind of stuff. So it's just SmackDown's taking a beating, and so maybe this will be a good chance for them to highlight some of the talent on SmackDown and push some of the stuff that's going on, try to get people over there to check out the show. But we'll see how it goes. Right now there is talk of another season of NXT starting next week and going until the end of September, until SmackDown officially moves into the time slot on Sci-Fi. Right now, the idea is, you know, season one has been built around Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan. Now, they are talking about building season two around Low-Ki. It'll be interesting to see, again, whether or not they keep some of these guys around. It just seems like a weird idea to build this show around all these rookies And then just as it gets to the point where people are accepting them as being on their TV, they are then going to flush all the guys out, bring in new guys. So I would half expect a bunch of those rookies, especially the quote-unquote cut ones, to reappear as some sort of foils for the guys in Season 2 to kind of, you know, keep them in the mix. Because last I heard, most of the guys getting quote-unquote cut from NXT aren't actually cut from the WWE. And so I'm waiting to get some more confirmation on that. But we'll know in a week or so whether or not any of that's going to hold true. Well, that's going to do it for the wrestling news. Not a whole lot else to talk about other than Ric Flair did let it leak that Arn Anderson is going into the Hall of Fame next year. And X-Pac has announced that he does have hepatitis C, which is why he missed the pay-per-view at TNA because he couldn't get licensed. But, you know, other than that, just not really a whole lot going on in TNA. Their show this last week was pretty good. Not fantastic, obviously, but it was pretty good. It was all right, but still, no, we're not doing full-time recaps of Impact right now. Just not going to do it. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, folks, and then we'll be back with your look at Monday Night Raw.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to PopCultureNetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at PopCultureNetwork.com.
Check out www.LockerRoomHQ.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.PopCultureNetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.PopCultureNetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on the Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.PopCultureNetwork.com. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Wrestling Radio here on Locker Room HQ, part of the Pop Culture Network. Again, I am your host, Dirt. And if you're just now tuning in, you've missed the news. And I'm also very confused on how you could just now be tuning in since this is a podcast and is available for download. Streaming. I guess maybe you could have streamed it and walked away. Didn't really hear the... I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, last night I sat down to watch Monday Night Raw. And, of course, I have two small children. I was trying to get them to go to sleep and settle down for the evening so I could get down and watch Raw. So get them in bed, and I start coming downstairs, and I realize that it's, 8:01. Show starts at 8. So technically, you know, missed an opening, minute or so. And I thought, no big deal. They just play that little, World Wrestling Entertainment intro, and then it's Memorial Day. They'll have the little Memorial Day video. I'll probably turn on the TV and see, the Blue Angels flying in a formation as part of a musical montage and, whatever. So I turn on the TV, and the first thing I see is Evan Bourne kicking Edge in the leg really hard in the middle of the ring as part of some impromptu match. And my first thought was, oh my gosh, is this a 3-hour show and I forgot about the first hour? And I kept watching, and they said Edge had come out and Daniel Bryan had come out to challenge him and said, if I can beat you, then I get your spot at Fatal 4-Way. And so Edge and he just started to fight. And And I'm just sitting here thinking, what did I miss? Like, what, like, is the show, I know the show does like a 5 to 10 minute overrun. Are they going to start doing an underrun? Do I have to start tuning in at a quarter till just to make sure I catch the opening of the show? Like, I don't understand what's happening. Well, apparently, this is just how they decided to open the show today. They decided that they didn't want Evan Bourne to go out there and cut a promo on television. They thought they would test him in front of the live crowd, and they would just go with this cold open of the two of them in the ring brawling. And needless to say, it was very interesting. It definitely, gave the show an unusual flow and caught your attention right at the beginning. So Evan Bourne, he goes up for a shooting star. Edge rolls out of the way. So Evan Bourne misses. He gets up, gets speared. Edge grabs the microphone, and he says, this is what's going to happen to everyone else at the pay-per-view. Just like Evan Bourne, they're all going down. He said Cena was the people's superhero. He said Sheamus was a bulldozer. He said Randy Orton, he was a snake in the grass. He was sick of hearing RKO. He said people were sheep for Randy Orton. And Edge is going to become the 10-time champion. So this, of course, brings out Randy Orton. And Edge says, you're not going to attack me, Orton. And everybody thinks you are, and you're not, because I know that you're injured. You're hurt right now. You can't hit your move on me. And you won't be 100% at Fatal 4-Way, which is why you're going to lose. So Orton looked at him, hit him with the RKO anyway, landed on his arm, immediately grabbed his arm, sold the injury. And it may have been a legitimate selling of the injury because it did not look good. Rolled out of the ring, and they announced tonight Cena, Edge, Sheamus, and Orton in your tag team main event match, which I heard this, and my immediate thought was, no, at least Edge is in there to mix it up a little bit, right? Because it's just, again, you have the same guys on top. They just kind of mix things up. Whenever there's feuds with single guys, they just put them into these tags, you know, in order to kind of mix things up a bit. So there's at least a little bit of history between guys, and they can switch them around after the pay-per-view. But just kind of one of those things. So I thought, you know, well, whatever, you know, could be worse. Backstage, we got Eve with Ashton Kutcher. And Ashton Kutcher, oddly enough, never appeared on stage, never appeared in the ring. He was always backstage the entire time. And he really didn't interact with a lot of people. He interacted with The Miz, and he interacted with Eve. And those are the only two people he did any sort of deal with. And, well, the woo-woo guy he called out, but they were never on screen at the same time. I don't think they were. No, they never were. So, if you hadn't figured it out by watching it on TV last night, Ashton Kutcher was not there. He was not in the arena. He guest hosted the show without being on the show. He lives in L.A. He didn't want to do the travel. You know, they would have had to pay him more to do it. Plus, he's in the middle of promoting his movie. So instead, Eve and The Miz, who both live in the L.A. area, met up with him on one of their days off. They set up the camera crew at a local arena, using one of the backstage areas, and they filmed as if he was actually in the arena. So everything with Ashton Kutcher was filmed last week, Thursday or Friday, I believe, and that's what ended up playing on Raw. And to be honest, you know, once you realize that he wasn't there, it kind of became obvious, but if you weren't paying attention and you weren't really thinking about it, you know, it came across fine. It worked. And this was really an experiment to see if they could pull something like that off, because they wonder with a lot of these people they want to bring on as guest hosts, whether or not it's better to do them as pre-tapes, not do them as guys in the arena all the time. And so that's something that they're looking at, is maybe they can do some more of these pre-tapes with people. Maybe people who are even in foreign countries and, one or two people, someone like William Regal can talk to somebody who's, over in England at some point and film some segments, and that guy can be a guest host on a show without ever having to come to the U.S. So be interesting to see There's a lot of interesting. I've said interesting like, I don't know, 20 times already. Maybe this is the interesting drinking game today. If you happen to have a bottle of bourbon sitting next to you or something, take a shot every time I say interesting. Because interesting is going to come up a lot because there's a lot of interesting stuff going out that, you know, I really find interesting. 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 Keep drinking. So, let's see. Eve and Ashton Kutcher, right. So, Ashton Kutcher was angry that Zack Ryder was talking smack to him on Twitter. Because, as you know, Ashton Kutcher is the number one celebrity on Twitter, and tweeting is his thing. So, he was talking about in his movie, he plays a hitman. He's going to put a hit out on Zack Ryder. Could be anybody. Could be a ring announcer, a referee, another superstar. Could be himself. Who knows? Could be anyone. And the funny thing was, as he was cutting this promo, as they were doing this whole pre-tape segment, they kept cutting to these arena shots and these shots of the crowd watching the video. And it was really odd. It almost seemed like mistakes at times. Like, whoops, accidentally hit a button. We got this overhead view of the arena. But it was also kind of interesting to see the arena while they were playing the on-air segments. I don't know. It just kind of struck me as unusual. So anyway, Miz came in, and they kind of went back and forth a little bit about who's the bigger star and whether or not Miz would be willing to do the Killers 2 and all this kind of stuff. And Aston said he had a talk with Bret Hart, and he said they've come up with a match for tonight. It's going to be Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. And Kutcher said that Daniel Bryan was going to make The Miz tap out. So they argued back and forth, kept yelling more and more. Miz said something about grab your Nikon camera. And Aston said, if I had a Nikon camera, I would shove it up your... And then Eve cut him off. Whoa, 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 boys, whoa. PG, TV PG. So that's another time they've pointed out the fact that Raw is now TV PG. They're really pushing that hard right now. And it's funny because so many people, so many, you know, fans who were big during the Attitude Era, they're, ah, I can't believe it, it's so watered down, it's so for kids. So now they've made it, pushing it in your face so hard that this is a show that's okay for kids, that in about 3 or 4 years, when things start to turn around and they need to do something different, they can have someone pop up and just say, we're not TV PG anymore, now we're TVMA, and then from that point on, it's going to be back to the Attitude Era of things until it's time to be TVPG again. So, just kind of funny how they just keep throwing that in everybody's face, how it's TVPG. We got R-Truth versus Chris Jericho. This was actually kind of a fun match. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I like both guys. R-Truth and Jericho are both good wrestlers. It was good to see them have a match. R-Truth, U.S. champion, came out with the title. They showed him winning the belt last week. And so we've talked on this show before about how Christian on SmackDown has been set in a feud with Dolph Ziggler. And it has been seen as a step down for Christian and a step up for Dolph Ziggler. And that is... I don't know why exactly they've decided to do that to Christian, but they have acknowledged that, yes, it is a step down for Christian. And they don't know if it's a permanent push downward or if it just happens to be that's what's happening right now. But the idea is that they are hoping the feud will help to elevate Dolph Ziggler. Truth versus Jericho is a great way to help elevate R-Truth. And for a guy like Jericho, Jericho's a guy who moves very easily between the mid-card and the main event. He's one of those guys who can be in the main event for 6 months. And he's completely believable. You have no problem with him being in the main event. Then he will drop down into a mid-card feud for 6 months. And then as soon as that mid-card feud is over, he pops right back up to the main event level and no one questions it. He's one of those guys who can make that transition. Whether or not Christian's going to be able to do that over on SmackDown remains to be seen. But for Jericho here, this is not going to hurt Jericho putting him into a feud with R-Truth. In fact, R-Truth is one of those most people would call him one of those hidden gems in the WWE. He's one of those guys who, if given a push, could really go up there and put on some great matches. He's the best example would be a guy like Jeff Hardy. How long was Jeff Hardy in mid-card feuds, in tag team matches? They finally decided they were going to just take the plunge, make him a main event guy. They had him beat Triple H on a show just to kind of gauge the reaction, and people loved it. And so as far as getting him over with the crowd, it worked. So they're hoping that that same deal is going to happen with R-Truth. They're hoping that they just start kind of pushing him in some higher profile matches, put him in some bigger feuds, have him get in some of those tag matches, you know, whoever the world champion is, they'll either have him, you know, with the guy on in a tag match or against the guy on a tag match, depending on who it happens to be at that point in time when they get there. But hopefully that will start to push R-Truth up to those upper levels. So we'll just wait and see what happens. But there was really one big problem in this match, and that was R-Truth picked up Jericho for some kind of suplex to drop him into a facebuster, and I think my guess would be that R-Truth called for a facebuster. So R-Truth went to grab Jericho, and Jericho assumed that R-Truth was just going to plant his face down on the mat, and instead R-Truth meant up for a suplex down for a facebuster. So he had to really kind of power Jericho up, and you could tell that Jericho didn't realize that he was supposed to be going up, and so then once he gets up, he gets into his extension, but he's not really sure what's going on, and then R-Truth, you know, drops him down for it, and it looked really awkward, looked really bad, but, you know, otherwise, the match was really good. They had Jericho go for the walls, R-Truth reverse it into some cradle, and ended up getting the pin. So, again, Jericho losing this match does not hurt Jericho. R-Truth winning the match helps R-Truth, so this made me incredibly happy all the way around. They had Zack Ryder backstage with Bret Hart. Said that he couldn't believe someone had put a hit on him. He asked if it had been Brett. Brett said, you know, you've got other things to worry about. I've got bigger things to worry about than you and your problems. Basically, get out of here. No soul to woo-woo guy. Then the Hart Dynasty come in and had a big hug. And Bret Hart said he knew those guys who attacked them last week. They are the Usos, the Usos. I'm not sure exactly how you're supposed to pronounce it, but it is apparently spelled U-S-O-S. And he said he had signed him to Raw. He said he didn't know that they were going to attack him, but he's not going to punish them for the attack because he said, you guys need to face a little adversity. You need to step up. You need to face this challenge because I know you can. And so he left and left the three of them there to strategize. And they all seemed pretty upbeat about the fact that the guy that their relative had signed, the guys that their relative had signed, and girl. Yeah, what? Anyway, moving on. They had Santino and Eve versus Maurice and Regal. And the funny thing was, they had Santino cut this promo. Santino's been trying to convince Kozlov to join him as a tag team. And Kozlov has been sticking with William Regal, because they've been buddies since their ECW days. So he was trying to talk Kozlov out of being on Regal's side. And Kozlov, you know, didn't want to do it, whatever, whatever. He said Eve had promised to make love to Kozlov if Kozlov would be on a team with Santino. And Eve said, no, this is not true. That's a total lie. And Santino said, no, just, you know, come on. And anyway, they ended up having the match anyway. Santino and Eve versus Maurice and Regal. Kozlov stood at ringside. The fans, they loved Santino. He did his Cobra move thing, his whatever it is, and they all the fans loved it. But Regal got the heat. He was the strongest guy, obviously, in the match. He basically was in control until it all broke down. Everybody's fighting all over the place. The referee comes in. He gets distracted. Kozlov, while the referee is distracted, attacks Regal, lays him out, grabs Eve, walks off with her, and Santino is able to pin William Regal and get the win. So apparently, TNA does a show where Abyss gets Chelsea for 30 days to be his servant, slave, whatever. So WWE thinks they'll take Eve and make her into Kozlov's consort for whatever period of time. And the problem is that him grabbing Eve and trying to take her off to be his frisky dingo is supposed to be a face move. This is what turns Kozlov from a heel to a face. And Eve is the Divas champion, but she can't fight back against the guys because I have a lot of problems with this storyline. I have a lot of problems, A, on the booking level, B, on the common sense and decency level, perhaps. I just, there has to be some way that this works that I'm missing. There has to be some part of the equation that I just don't see. And you guys are pretty good about hopping on the message board on our forums, lockerroomhq.com, hitting the forums, Pop Culture Network, and letting me know what I'm missing here. So if you know what I'm missing about this whole Eve being Kozlov's love slave thing, just let me know. I want to know what I'm missing about all this being a face deal. So anyway, they did their Memorial Day video package that normally would have been at the beginning of the show. They put it here, which was, again, they did that cold open, so that was good. At least we still got the video package. That's what was important. They had Bret Hart come out. He says he loves being GM. He said he talked to Teddy Long, and next week on Raw, they're going to have the Raw and SmackDown 3-hour special. He said he's going to let the fans help, so he wants the fans to get on WWE.com, vote for stuff, whatever. It'll be a whole lot of fun. Out comes Ted DiBiase and still the employed by WWE Virgil. He just basically said, everybody's got a price. Make me the GM for the night. Make me not just like a guest host guy, but give me the ability to make matches, move people around, do whatever. He says he knows that Bret came back to WWE because he needed money, so I'm going to give you money. You just make me the GM. And at this point, Ashton Kutcher appeared on the big screen. He said he had a better idea. Instead of making Ted DiBiase the GM, he wanted to make Raw like Cyber Sunday. Instead of just having the fans give feedback, he wanted to actually have them vote. He wanted to vote on stipulations, vote on opponents, get all of that stuff together. Suddenly, as they were thinking about this idea, and again, not having Ashton Kutcher in the ring, like, really kind of stood out here. It just really made this kind of weird. But anyway, suddenly, Vince McMahon's music hit. And Vince came down to the ring, and at some point, when Vince McMahon's music hits or he starts to walk to the ring, this makes Ted DiBiase just disappear. I'm not sure what happened to Ted. Ted, maybe he had to go check on Ashton Kutcher's feed, because Ashton cut out here. Apparently, he didn't want to talk via satellite with Vince McMahon. If he had been backstage, he just didn't want to talk to the guys out front now that Vince was there. I don't know how this was all supposed to work, but anyway. They had Vince come out, talked about Bret, talked about how Bret looked a lot older than he did at WrestleMania, talked about how Bret had hit him with a chair 18 times, asked Bret if he had gotten it out of his system. Bret said, well, most of it, but not all of it. Vince said the reason he okayed Bret as general manager was because he thought it was the right thing to do. He said the fans are children, and he knows that a general manager has to be someone who can think of the fans as children. He said when you're mentoring children, children will often not make the right choice, so you have to make the right choice for them. So Vince just basically said, I came out here to wish you luck. He asked Brett if he believed that. Brett said no, and then said, well, your life story is an interesting one. You're a guy who was banished from this show 13 years ago. Now you're back. Now you're general manager. So let's just hope that the ending of your term here as general manager is a happy one. And Vince then put a smirk on his face, strutted off, and that was the end of the segment. Now, obviously, they're trying to foreshadow something, but what? I don't know. This whole segment made no sense. I can see Brett coming out, Ashton, whoever, appearing on the screen, the two of them talking about having this fan voting Cyber Sunday thing. That's fine. I'm guessing what happened is during the pre-tapes, when they pre-taped Kutcher's segment, he said something else. I'm betting there was some sort of part two to what they were going to do on next week's show. And sometime between when they filmed them and when the show aired, they decided that they couldn't use that. Whatever he said was not going to be applicable. It wasn't going to make any sense, or they had to go in a different direction. Maybe it had something to do with The Undertaker getting injured. Who knows? Maybe it had something to do with the main event change-up later tonight. Regardless, it was very awkward, and they probably just thought, well, at that point, we'll cut off the pre-tape of Kutcher, and we'll just send out Vince. And Vince can go kill time and, you know, talk about something else, change the subject. So I'm guessing that's what happened here. Because they were pre-tapes taped at the end of last week, something happened. They just decided whatever something he said was unusable. They're doing something in a different direction, and so there you go. If that's not the reason, if it's just because Vince wanted to be on TV, then screw you, Vince, because you ruined and made very awkward a segment. They had Zach Gowen backstage meeting with Orton. He asked Orton if he was the one who had been hired to take out the hit on Zack Ryder. Orton said, if I was the guy who was going to be taking out the hit on you, we wouldn't be having this conversation. And so Zack Ryder walks off, and as Orton is standing there, suddenly the door to his dressing room slams into his arm, knocks him to the ground. He grabs his arm in pain, writhing on the ground. We see Edge come out of his dressing room. Edge is the one who attacked Orton. So now Orton will not be able to compete in the main event match tonight. Next up, we had Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. Michael Cole, of course, they showed recaps of Michael Cole, getting his cheap shots in on Daniel Bryan last week on NXT. They showed Daniel Bryan attacking The Miz. They showed, all that kind of stuff, pushed that whole feud. So, of course, Michael Cole spent the entire match talking down Daniel Bryan. They also had, clips of The Miz talking about how much he hates Daniel Bryan, et cetera, et cetera. So the two of them go out there for this fun little match. One thing that struck me about Daniel Bryan was that Daniel Bryan is a very, shall we say, realistic wrestler. And what I mean by that is a lot of guys, when they take a punch, for instance, if they take a big punch, they put this look on this face, on their face, like the air's just been knocked out of them. They'll stagger back a little bit, and then they bump. And that's kind of the over-the-top pro wrestling performance that most people are used to. Daniel Bryan, he does things differently. He takes a big punch, he crumbles. If he gets hit with a big clothesline, he drops. Everything that pro wrestlers do that's that over-the-top selling, he doesn't do. He does things much more realistically, which in some ways makes him look a lot weaker than your average pro wrestler, because the average pro wrestler will, not sell things to a certain degree because that's what pro wrestlers do. Whereas Daniel Bryan, if he takes a big hit, it looks like he's taking a big hit, and he's going to, sell it that way. And so I recalled during this match, watching this happen, I recalled that when Bryan Danielson first signed with WWE, he had a dark match with Chavo, and it went very well, and it was really over with the crowd, and everybody said that Chavo had a really great match with him, but he said, I just, I don't think I'm quite ready for this. I need to go to Florida Championship Wrestling and, get in some more practice. So they sent him down to Florida Championship Wrestling, and I'm guessing that a big part of what he was doing there was trying to learn that WWE style. WWE put him in that dark match. They wanted to see how he could play it out, what he needed to work on for that WWE style. I bet they came back to him and said, you need to do some of this, you need to do some of that, you need to stop fighting, the impulse to do this and whatever. And I bet he said, you know what, that's completely different for me, just send me to Florida Championship, let me work on it. And so I'm betting that that's what that whole story was about, because here tonight you could see that he is just... when you talk about a new breed of wrestler, he really is that guy. And I know a lot of people have been watching him from ROH shows and whatever, but there are a lot of people who have never seen the guy wrestle before. And it became very apparent to me watching this particular match, because The Miz is not a very good wrestler, and putting him in there with Daniel Bryan just made it crystal clear that Daniel Bryan is working on a completely different level. And so it was really great. He ended up getting the pin. Miz had dropped Daniel Bryan down, got him into a cradle, but Bryan basically reversed it, turned it into a crucifix, got the pin. Miz attacked him afterwards, was beating on him, threw him outside, was beating him up in front of Michael Cole. Michael Cole was very happy until Daniel Bryan turned it around, beat up The Miz, then grabbed The Miz, chucked him over the announce table right onto Michael Cole. And that was awesome. The match was too short. I mean, it was only a couple minutes long, but for what it was good. If they'd given him a little more time, it probably would have gotten over a little bit better. But all in all, I think that it worked out really well. It made Daniel Bryan look really good. It made The Miz look terrible, as he should. And I just enjoyed a whole lot of that segment. Go to commercial, come back, and the Usos are in the ring. They cut a promo. Jay and Jimmy Uso and Tamina, I think they said her name was. They were not good on the mic. You could tell that they were very green. You could tell that they weren't really sure what they were saying. For guys who came out last week and attacked the Hart Dynasty the way they did, the way they acted, the way they were dressed, when they came out tonight, they looked like gangster preppy wannabes. Gangster preppies. Like, they were dressed nice, but they're talking about how the world be tripping. And, I don't know. Just, their whole gimmick and their whole look just doesn't work for me. They sounded like they were trying to be straight street, but, they were wearing their church clothes. I don't know what the deal was. But anyway. So they said, Tamina said that they respected the Harts. All the fans booed her, but she said she was Jimmy Snuka's daughter. So then they were kind of like, oh, well, that's kind of cool, but whatever. So then finally the Harts run down to the ring. They all, fight for a while until finally, they go back up top, do the triple splash on the guys, and that was it. So it was not the best. Their run-in last week was great. This was really not that fantastic. And the Harts being laid out so quickly is kind of a bad sign for guys who are your unified tag team champions. They need to have a good feud, but it's... it's a little too early to take the belts off the Harts, and it's way too early to put the belts on these guys. So you're going to have guys feuding for the titles who have no chance of winning, and the guys who are retaining the titles are guys who need more credibility in the eyes of your average fan before the average fan is going to care about whether or not they retain the titles. So I know that WWE is hurting for tag teams, but they need something else in the mix here, because this just isn't going to work that well. They had Zack Ryder come out. He said he didn't want to be jumped. He demanded that Kutcher tell him who was coming to get him. So Jerry Lawler kind of slinked in the ring with a chair, but he sat down in the corner, and Kutcher said it wasn't Jerry Lawler. Great Khali's music hit. Khali comes down to the ring. Zack Ryder bails. Kutcher says, nope, it's not Khali. So then Zack Ryder gets back in the ring. Khali leaves. Goldust's music hits. Goldust comes out on the stage. He says, nope, it's not Goldust either. He's just having fun, playing with your mind. Finally, Alicia grabbed the microphone, said, you better tell us who it is, dropped the microphone, then hit Zack Ryder with the axe kick, and then did a little dance. They played her music. She left. As terrible and lame as that sounds, that's exactly what they did. Every week there's some sort of death segment, something that just kills the momentum for the show. And they did this one minutes before your main event. Good call, guys. They had Sheamus and Edge backstage. He said he liked what Edge had done to Orton. He said, we don't trust each other, but we can work together. We can weaken Cena. That way when we go into Fatal 4-Way, he won't be 100% because he won't recover in 3 weeks, whatever. But he said, you better not take advantage trying to take me out. Otherwise, it'll be the last thing you ever do. And they kind of left that animosity there. They had Sheamus and Edge come out. Cena came out on the ramp. He said due to Edge's attack earlier, Orton was re-injured, and he would not be able to wrestle tonight in the main event. He said he didn't have a whole lot of time to choose a new partner, but he was fine because there's a locker room of people that hate them, and he had found a great partner. He called him a human wrecking ball high flyer. He said he was mad about what Edge had done to him earlier tonight, and so suddenly Evan Bourne's music hit, and the place erupted. It was... I marked out, I have to admit, because Evan Bourne, everybody knows that Evan Bourne is a really great wrestler, and he's a guy who really should be given that chance to shine. And so WWE really hasn't been using him. Vince thinks he's too small, wasn't going to give him a push against some of these big guys, even though all the fans, throughout the guy's career loved him. When he signed with WWE, they thought it was great, and then they didn't do a whole lot with him. But now, because of the injuries, all the changes taking place backstage with, big names like Shawn Michaels retiring, Undertaker wanting time off, now being injured, Orton being injured, Triple H out for the time being, all that kind of stuff. The place just went nuts that Evan Bourne was going to be in this match. So they had Evan Bourne come out. He just hit a bunch of stuff early, just jumping all over the place. He did a really great job, really believable job of keeping the big heels down until they were able to overpower him again, and then he was just the babyface in peril. He would get, little moves in here and there, kind of build the crowd back up, but then they would re-overpower him. Quick tags by the heels working together to, keep him down. But the thing was, you really got this feeling like if he, just got a couple moments to, recollect himself, he would be back on top again. It felt more like the heels, were cutting him off by working together as a team and keeping him isolated from Cena. And Cena, on the outside, he did a great job as a second. If he had been a, ringside manager or some sort of deal like that in this match, he did an excellent job of playing with the crowd, keeping them interested in the match, keeping them excited for the match, playing to Evan Bourne and everything that he's going through to really make them care about what was happening in the ring. So all in all, it really made Evan Bourne look like a top-level guy for being this small little high-flying guy who doesn't have the greatest track record. So then eventually Cena gets the hot tag. He comes in, cleans house on everybody. Evan Bourne catches his breath. They throw Sheamus into the corner where Evan Bourne kicks him in the head. Cena hits him with the attitude adjustment. Edge comes in for the spear, but Cena ducks out of the way and shoves him into the post. So Edge falls to the outside, tags in Evan Bourne, drags Sheamus over. Evan goes up top, hits the shooting star press, beautifully hits Sheamus. I mean, perfectly. You could not have hit that move any better than what he ended up doing there. And Evan Bourne ended up getting the pin on Sheamus to end the show. And of course, Cena came out, celebrated with Evan Bourne, treated Evan Bourne like he was his equal, really played up the fact that Evan Bourne was the one who won and got the pin, really pushed him for the crowd. So there's always the possibility that because of Orton's injury, Orton will be out of the Fatal 4-Way, and Cena will be like, well, you know what, let's put Evan Bourne in, and they'll let Evan Bourne do the match, and from that point on, he'll be like a Jericho, a guy who will move between main event and mid-card, back and forth, and I think the fans will have no problem allowing him to be one of those guys. Or, there's the entire possibility that next week, they will sign Evan Bourne versus Sheamus. Sheamus will come out, beat the crap out of him, and Evan Bourne will be back to wrestling Chavo Guerrero on Superstars, or whatever he's going to end up doing. So it's really, it was fascinating. It was a great main event. It was just, I loved everything about that main event, and everything worked so brilliantly on that main event and the angle around it, but again, I'm just afraid that next week all my hopes and dreams are going to be dashed, and that'll be the end of Evan Bourne's push. But if they go with it, I mean, they did an excellent job of setting it up right here tonight. Well, that's going to wrap up the show, everybody. I want to thank you for listening. That's what happened on Raw. Don't forget to check out, we have other podcasts about other things going on. We have the It Figures toy podcast be going up tomorrow. We'll have Thoughts with Duvall coming on Thursday. We've got new episodes of Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, Not Mint and Box, Masters of the Universe Chronicles, Comic Nation TV, The Comics Corner. Hopefully Boom Studios will get us their preview books ready so that we can go ahead and read over those, get those previews posted for you, get those reviews up. But regardless, be sure you keep your eye on popculturenetwork.com for all the rest of the stuff that's going up around our various networks. And of course, you want more wrestling, MMA, sports talk, keep your eyes on Locker Room HQ, which is part of the Pop Culture Network. Thank you guys, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you on Friday with your spoilerific early look at Friday Night SmackDown, and of course your recap of WWE Superstars on WGN America. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you next time.
What's up, straight edge? Do not watch this DVD. Do not watch this DVD. Sell it on eBay. Do not watch the DVD. You give out that DVD, you might as well be peddling drugs.